You're tuned in to the HR Bandit podcast, your one-way ticket to the latest and craziest in the world of work. In partnership with Timber Media, Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.
Hey, hey! Welcome to episode 11 of HR Bandit, the pod where we discuss everything that's happening in the world of work. We recently hit a landmark moment where we completed 1 year of existence. And today, we hit yet another landmark, that of bringing on the show one of our dream guests. Before I share who, let's take a quick look at our top three topics for discussion today. There is so much happening in the world of work that it was hard to pick just three. But we gotta do what we gotta do. So first up, it has been 4 months since the war began. The markets have crashed, inflation is at an all-time high, and VC funding is drying up. With news of Netflix, Meta, and more freezing hiring, do organizations abandon democratic decision-making in times of crisis? For a second topic, hello, loyalty bonuses. This seems to be the new term in the world of retention. Is this for real? And for a last and final topic of the day, in spirit of Global Accessibility Awareness Day, celebrated on 19th May and Pride Month this June, should organizations be held responsible to do more? With that, fellow bandits, let me introduce you to our guest for the day. I have been jumping in joy, excitement, and nervousness, I don't know if you can tell, for over a month, and telling anyone who'd listen about our very special guest today. I'm so pleased to welcome Dave Aldrich, also known as the father of modern HR, to the show. The man needs no introduction, but for those who've been hiding under a bush, Dave Aldrich is a Rensis Likert professor at the Ross School of Business, University of Michigan, and a partner at the RBL Group, a consulting firm focused on helping organizations and leaders deliver value. He has published over 200 articles and book chapters and over 30 books. He edited Human Resource Management 1990-99, served on editorial board of 4 other journals and on the board of directors for Herman Miller for 16 years. He's also obviously given a million talks, interviews, and Q&As, and is a distinguished fellow in the National Academy of Human Resources. Dave, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm so excited to join you, Ankita. I can add to my bio that I've now had the privilege of joining HR Bandit. So maybe that's the highlight of my bio. So what a privilege. And I'm so delighted to join you today. Thank you so much. What a great addition to my bio.
I'm going to hold you to that. Like, if I'm going to go onto LinkedIn and see, does it feature there and on your bio? But Dave, is, I don't know about yours, it is definitely going on mine.
Oh, you're so kind. Well, I look forward to the conversation. I'm more impressed than ever with the quality of HR professionals around the world, that we as an HR community worldwide, we respond to the three topics you raised: the uncertainty in the world, the employee loyalty, and the need to do more. And so what great topics that you've picked. Thank you so much for the privilege of talking with you.
Awesome, Dave. Before we jump into our three topics, though, I want to ask you, you know, I'm going to ask you a fair bit of questions today, but in all your experience, what is the one question you wish people would ask you but never do?
That's a great question, and I'm stumped. The question I love to talk about is what I have an ad in television about the Energizer Bunny that keeps on going and going and going. I'm kind of the Energizer Bunny. People give me a bad time. What's your hobby? Work. What do you like to do for fun? Work. I like what I do. And why? And it's to really create value for others and to learn. Those are my two pillars. I want to learn, and I'm hoping today I'll learn with you and from you, and I want to learn in ways that help others get better. And I love trying to build my agenda around that learning and value creation message. So, I mean, that's the question I enjoy talking about. Where does that come from? I think it comes from my family. I think it comes from my faith that encouraged me to learn and to create value for others. So thank you for letting me answer a question you didn't even ask.
Well, you saved me from asking you that. With that, Dave, I'm going to jump straight into our first topic for the day. Now, it would be amiss not to mention the rest in Ukraine. It has devastating consequences around the world. And I'm sure many of us are following the war, the energy crisis, the stock market, and inflation. Now, it's reached a point where it likely has far-reaching consequences for over a decade, if not more, especially for Europe. But we're also seeing immediate impact. And one of it is the fear of an impending recession. Several organizations are making news because of either freezing hiring or layoffs. Because you spend a lot of time thinking about how organizations are structured and operating models, I wanted to ask you, in times of crisis, should organizations adopt a different operating style? Is it better, for example, in the interest of speed, to move into a command and controlled mode for a period instead of continuing this whole democratic decision-making system?
I wish there was a simple answer to a tough question. I mean, look at what you laid out. You laid out the pandemic, the war in Ukraine, recession, inflation, retention. Let me answer that with a very specific story about one piece of that. When the war in Ukraine happened, everyone I know in the world was just emotionally devastated. I remember 100 days ago, 4 months ago, I don't watch TV that much, but just being fixated, and it felt like an emotional avalanche. How can this be happening in our world? And so I started to think, what can we do as an HR community to help, first of all, the refugees? And so with Mihai Nagy in Hungary, my wife and I did a session for HR professionals in Poland and Romania and in Europe. What can you do with the millions of women and their children who are refugees? How can we help? That led this week. That's why it's a current story. And I'm going to get emotional. I don't do that very often. Juliana said, would you be willing to talk to Ukrainian HR professionals? Now, this is a lighthearted, a fun interview, but that's not an easy discussion. What can HR do in a war zone? We're being attacked. We're being invaded. What can we do to help our people? So this week, literally real time, my wife and I had a session with 1,000 HR professionals in the Ukraine. What a privilege. And here's what I walked away with. They are doing incredible, incredible things. The spirit of the human spirit is remarkable. They're finding agility. They're changing their company focus. They're taking care of their people. They're caring in remarkable ways to build a community among their employees that allows them to cope. And if I were to pick two messages out of that I think apply now, not just in the Ukraine crisis, but to recession, uncertainty, what's going to happen? One is agility. They move quickly. For example, a company that was making clothing, they decided they had to move to make military apparel. So within 30 days, they've shifted their business. A grain company that harvested grain, Ukraine is a large grain producer in the world. They had to move to produce the grain into flour and produce food for the army. They did that within 60 days. They changed their entire business model, which has all kinds of HR implications. Connecting with people, caring for people. One of the people they wanted to keep employed, they decided that he would be a driver of families of the employees across the border so they could be safe as refugees. I just get touched by the emotional agility and energy of those people. The second theme. So my takeaway, no matter what happens, in a world of uncertainty, we've got to respond quickly. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know if there's going to be a recession. We don't know if there'll be another COVID outbreak. The second one is, and this one is the one that I walk away with. In the world of uncertainty, discover your certainty. What do you know for sure? The HR people in Ukraine know that they're resilient. They know they can respond. They know that they care for people. They know they care for their families. They'll know they love freedom. Those principles around which they're certain, they don't know what's going to happen next. They don't know what the Russian invasion will be. They don't know about the stock market. They don't know about inflation. But knowing those things allows them to act with confidence. Now, I've gone too far. Let me go back to the two things in a world that I don't know if we can predict. One, move, agile, learn, experiment, test, try. Two, be certain. I love that certainty. where you started today was really fun. What am I certain of? I don't know what's going to happen in my career. Will I travel? Will I not travel? Will I work in an office? Will I work at home? Will I continue to be able to talk to people at the HR Bandit and have these great discussions? I know in my world, I'm going to learn and I'm going to try to add value to others. Those are my pillars. So I'm going to ask you, what are you certain of? You've got a great career. You laid out your incredible career. You don't know what's going to happen next. Where am I going to live? Who am I going to live with? What are my children might do? My family, my loved ones, my work. But what are you absolutely certain of that you'll act on with agility? That's my Ukraine lesson this week. So let me just stop.
What am I absolutely certain about?
No matter what will happen.
I'm going to come at it from a far angle and then answer that specific question. I was asked to predict what would happen in 5 to 10 years. And my response to that is that the one thing I'm certain about is that life is going to become increasingly uncomfortable. That's because we're going to be exposed to, we can no longer live in a bubble, and we are going to be exposed to things we don't like, which aren't familiar. It has happened like in the past 3 years, more often than I'm used to at least. And I don't think that's going to slow down.
How do you know how you'll respond? How do you respond to those things that we can't predict?
The one thing I've, like, two ways. A, by not taking everything very seriously. I think when you take life very seriously, you tend to get very attached to things. So you just take everything a little less seriously. Think about, you know, what happens if I press that button? So take things less seriously and come to it with a sense of curiosity. And I think those two, along with, like, help in being agile, adapting, and all of it.
I love it. I love it. Now, if I were coaching you, and if I ever had that privilege, I would say take those two things, humor, goodwill, fun, not serious, and curiosity, and then look at all the uncomfortable things that might happen. And if you can practice those two principles, not serious and curious, you'll be okay, because the external world won't control you. And what I love to say to the leaders I coach is find certainty in uncertainty. So what is the certainty in your life? For you, I think it's, I'm going to have fun. By the way, I love that one. I love that one. My children tell me I have a horrible sense of humor because I always have to tell people I made a joke so they don't laugh. But I say, that was a joke. But I think that is so fun, to take things not seriously. And I love the curiosity. That's my learning. Curiosity is the roots of learning. And now, if I were coaching you, I'd say, you don't know what's going to happen. You just don't know. And you're right. We're going to put in Ukraine, they got put 120 days ago into a position they could never have expected. Guess what? For them, it's resilience. We're going to be resilient. We're going to adapt. We're going to care. And humanity, caregiving is going to bear fruit. And so using those principles, the HR people are doing incredible things. I, by the way, I've got a list of these and it's going to get posted eventually with the HR people. Again, this is real time. This was 2 days ago. So, for example, we talk to every employee every day. We check in just to know they're okay. I love the one, our employees will drive families across borders so they're safe. We're starting to make food so that our employee, the grain company, we're making food. We're not just planting grain and wheat and flour. We're producing food that we feed our employees so they know they'll be taken care of. I just think, wow. By the way, I'm going to make a confession. I thought, okay, we have ideas. I went to about 30 HR leaders around the world and said, we stand with Ukraine. And they all put their names on a sheet and it was really cool. We're here to help you. I now walk away. I got it wrong. They're going to help us. And the essay I want to write next is, how does the Ukrainian HR experience around agility, around certainty in times of crisis, inform the rest of us and the rest of the world? So we're not here to help you. You're here to help us. And I find that just delightful that, okay, I'll get off that. That's more emotional. That's not just fun. But boy, do I get excited about that. I mean, one of the things they've done, they've said, when we do immigrants, we now as a company in HR have talked to the government agencies in the countries where our people are immigrating, refugees, and it's gone from 6 months to get a work visa to 6 days because we provided air cover to make that happen. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that I just go, wow, I'm so proud to be part of HR. that in a world I can't predict, that's, I know, your first topic. We have two more. In a world I can't predict, recession, inflation, unemployment, what am I certain about? And how can I use that certainty to act with agility?
Awesome. I actually love the question of, in the world of uncertainty, what are you certain about? I'm going to stick to the topic just for a little while longer, because I do want to come to a more conclusive answer of, we know what HR is doing, but does the organization need to change its style? Like, do you think when we start doing the democratic decision making that we've advocated for in times of crisis, it might slow down? And then there's a time for command and control, and there's a time not for it.
Absolutely. But let me give you an example again. And the answer is, I don't know. How's that for an honest answer?
Yes.
But you got to do what's right. For example, in Ukraine, you assume this is a crisis. We have to move decision making to the top so it happens. One of the things they've done in one of their operations is they've said, instead of going through a benefits process, which is complicated to get healthcare, we have now gone to the local plant. So that's decentralizing decision making, given them a pool of money and said, take care of your people. So in some ways, in a crisis, instead of centralizing decision making, they've decentralized it because they've said, we don't know what medical needs you may have because of the war. You've got a pool of money. You don't have to go through a benefits complicated HR process. No offense to benefits people. We love you too. But you don't have to go through that. Here's a pool of money. We trust you. Go. So I think there's a time to centralize. I mean, think of that. And I don't know how this happened. Think of the agriculture company making flour. They're growing grain. Mm-hmm. They changed their business from grain because they can't export it. They can't get it through the ports because the Russians have blocked the ports.
Exactly.
We're going to change our business. We're going to process the grain and make bread and food. Somebody at the top had to make that decision, and they had to make it within the next few days. But on the other hand, I love that idea to say there's a plan in somewhere in Ukraine. They need healthcare benefits. We don't know exactly what they are because of their situation. Here's a pool of money. We trust you. Go do it. So I think the answer is, what can we do to help our employees have an experience at work that allows them to continue to feel cared for and feel empowered? And I think we're going to see a lot of innovation. And so, by the way, my answer before this week might have been, yes, in times of crisis, you centralize to get decisions made quicker. But now I'm saying it depends on the decision. And what I hope we do in HR is say, what do we need the decision to be? We got a healthcare crisis. This plant's in the war zone. We don't know what medical needs are required. By the way, another one is your salary. We're going to pay some of it to you in the Ukraine, and some of it we're going to pay to your family who are refugees in another country in whatever currency you want. Done. And we now allow you, the employee, to make a decision how your salary will be paid. I mean, so that's decentralizing and centralizing. So I think we have to navigate some of that inherent tension. And again, I'm so excited about the lessons from Ukraine that HR professionals in India, in Buenos Aires, in Brazil, in Russia, not in Russia right now, but in the rest of the world. Can we learn some of those principles and begin to adapt them? So I love the question. Love the question. But we do have to move quickly. We do have to move quickly. In World War II, my final caveat. The auto manufacturers, and I don't know about India, but the auto manufacturers in the U.S. were making cars. They changed to making tanks and airplanes, but it took them 9 to 12 months. In the Ukraine, they changed from growing grain to producing bread in 30 days. Think of all the talent implications. Think of the cultural implications. So the agility today has just got to be quicker than we've ever seen.
Yeah, and I think it all brings us back to, like, what do we need to get done? And then how you get done is just dependent.
Well said. Well said.
You're tuned in to the HR Bandit podcast, your one-way ticket to the latest and craziest in the world of work. In partnership with Timber Media, Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.
Because you've mentioned benefits and already brought our friends into the conversation, I'm going to use that to move on to our second topic, because it is on a related note. Now, we know a number of organizations declared a slow quarter in their recent financial reports. We've heard VC funding is drying up, and there are tweets out there saying turbulent waters are not times to jump ship. Yet on the other hand, it is a hot market for certain jobs. there was a quote saying there's a 7% increase in wages, while if you stick around in the same company, you end up paying a loyalty tax. Now, there's also the newest term that I heard, and I think it's been a few weeks since it's been out, called retention bonus. Now, we know that new hires always, you know, come in at a higher pay. Well, not always, but mostly. It creates a compression in the range. This is not new. What's new is maybe the percentage of people coming in at higher is greater because of the great resignation and so on. But I'm still finding it hard to settle in with the concept of a retention or a loyalty bonus. And I'm very curious what your take on it is, in particular on that, but also largely, like, if you were to rejig our entire comp and ben system, like, what are we missing that's glaring at us right now?
Well, the first thing is, I think I like the last piece that you said a lot, the entire comp and ben, the entire reward system. And I'd broaden it. Rewards is not just comp and ben. You have to have compensation, I think, within a range of comfort. Mm-hmm. So when would somebody leave a company? Be great if I ask you. When would you be willing to leave your current job? Is it 5%? No. 10%, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60. I talked to somebody the other day. He said, oh, I've got a 50% increase in compensation. Should I leave? And I go, that's an IQ test. I mean, now beware.
Yeah.
If compensation is done right, they're paying you a 50% premium because there's a problem in that job. It's a risky company. It's a startup company. They're paying you the 50%. And if you look deeper, your base pay is reduced, actually, and you're at risk with stock options. So generally, when the pay increases get super high, one person said, I've got a 40% increase to go work for company X. I won't name that company. But as I talked to them, they really burn out their employees. There's not a retention over a year. They work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They have no life. Should I do that? And I go, well, now you have a choice. So the first for me is, it's not just pay. And I love the idea of retention bonus. I kind of wonder, why am I willing as a company to pay somebody a 30% increase and not pay my current employee that increase if they're doing a good job? So that's one. So I don't think it's just money. The research showed before the recent economic crisis, and we've gone through a lot of crises, that people will start to look at leaving in general. You may be very different personally for whatever reason, at 25 to 33%. So if I'm making 100 and I'm getting 130 for moving, I'll probably start to pay attention. By the way, if it gets into the 160 or 70, you got to ask yourself, there's something wrong. A number of years ago, and I'm sorry to tell personal stories, but it's fun to kind of get personal.
Oh, you should.
I was sitting in my home near the university, and I got a call from one of the first and largest private equity companies that were doing leverage buyouts. And they said, we are interested, Dave. We know the human issues are critical to a leverage buyout. We'd love to think about you coming on as an equity partner. We will pay you $1 million a year base plus bonus. And I said, you'll pay me $1 million a year plus bonus? And my wife yelled out, take it, take it. And I said, so what's the job? Day one, you get on an airplane. Day 365, you get off. Well, what would I be doing? You'll go into a plant and you'll fire 30% of the people, and then you'll move to the next plant and the next one. And it didn't take me long to go, no, that's not my values, because the goal here is just to have somebody be a brutal. Anyway, I don't need to go more than that. So pay is a piece of that equation, and everybody's in a different place on pay depending on where you are. The second part, though, is, and it's why I'd expand when you said compensation and benefits, total rewards. What is it that drives an employee experience? Compensation for me is a kind of benchmark. You got to be within the zone of acceptability. We think there's four things, and I'll be real clear. One is be safe.
Mm-hmm.
Physically, and that's Ukraine. The first issue we worry about is physical safety, but also emotional safety. Somebody did a post recently. They said, I reviewed an article. It was an academic article. It's amazing, my academic friends. Toxic leaders are not good. And I'm going, you have to write an article on that? I mean, duh. So there's physical, and I'm trying to be funny here because you told me to not be serious.
Oh.
But be safe is, I think, a foundation piece. You got to be safe, yeah, physically and emotionally. Second, believe. You got to have meaning at work. How does this work and my job give me a sense of meaning? I get a sense just from talking to you, you love your job, because when we do this bandit discussion, you find meaning from helping others. And you talked about that, your curiosity. Be safe, believe, become. Am I learning? Am I growing? Am I developing the growth mindset work that we've all heard about? Am I getting better at my skills? And finally, belong. Am I part of a community? Four B's, be safe, believe, become, and belong. My sense is compensation is kind of table stakes. If I'm going to play a game of poker, I've got to ante, I've got to have it, because I can lose. If I don't pay you enough, you're not going to play. But once I'm in that game, those are the four real differentiators. Be safe, believe, become, and belong. And when we manage those, I think we get employees. And I love the idea of retention bonus. Again, I love what you said as well. Most of this is not new. Most of this is not new. But I think the be safe, believe, become, and belong really give us a topology or framework. You go to my employees and say, you could leave. Oh, the other advice I give, if somebody leaves for that salary of 50% higher and they're good, stay in touch, because they may want to come back. I think one of the big bonus pools or pools of talent are going to be employees who've left. And you can't bring them back at the 50% salary, because then you say the only way to get paid more is to leave. You'd say to them, yep, you took a risk. You took 50% salary. I can bring you back at 20%. So the retention bonus may be time too. But and there's, again, not new. The companies that did that in one of the last recessions when people left, and the employee opportunity, they found that at time to hire, rebound hires, whatever you want to call it, they stayed longer, much longer, because they had tested the outside market. So my comments to those listening, don't be afraid to let people go and stay in touch. By the way, if they're bad, you should encourage them to go. There should not be a retention bonus, but a release bonus. We'll pay you to go work at our competitor and keep doing for them what you've done for us. We'll place you in our competitor. So those are my comments on compensation and reward.
And then maybe the takeaway for us also is, if you hear 20 to 25%, just go try it out and then come back.
But don't let them, you can't do that, because again, they tried that in China when they opened China in Hong Kong. People would leave and then use their step outside to come back inside. And the company said, we don't want, I mean, then we're creating this crazy career path. You got to bring it back at a moderate bonus, perhaps, but not at an obscene bonus.
I agree. It is. I think this space is one of the toughest to play in, because we've been, HR has pay has existed for God knows how many decades, and we still don't think we've got it right. So,
nor will we. And by the way, in the world of uncertainty, I heard somebody give me great advice. That person said, "Don't take it too seriously and stay curious." So, in the compensation world, we don't know what's going to happen next, but have fun with it.
Yeah.
And be curious and learn. And there'll be ways to learn. So I think whoever gave that advice was very smart.
Thank you. I should find that person for my next pod.
That's cool. You should interview yourself. That would be a great podcast.
I might just be admitted into a lunatic asylum the next day. But with that, Dave, I'm going to bring us to our last topic. And this is my favorite, because I have learned so much about accessibility recently, mostly because of personal experience. I've worked with people who, for example, are visually challenged. And I have worked for almost a decade, and I'm so used to copy-pasting tables as images into documents, right? And then I never thought that it was such a challenge for someone who uses a text reader to be like, don't do that. It's painful to create a table, but just create it so that I have access to what's written in it. And now every time I see it, it triggers me. I'm the evil HR person who's like, do not paste tables. Do not do that. But it's there's so much I've learned. And, I also came across this sentence, and this is the one I want to pick up for discussion with you. It said, meritocracy is the enemy of equity. And I'm almost inclined to agree. I think meritocracy stands a place where everyone has similar advantages or disadvantages. And I want A, to gauge your reaction to that, and B, if you agree, then what should organizations do in that space?
One of the things we've learned in our research, and I don't want to take this too serious, is successful business and HR leaders navigate paradox. So you got two trends. Meritocracy is good because it forces value. Equality is good. Equity versus equality. How do you navigate that paradox? And there's not an obvious answer. I guess one of the takeaways to my session with you today is we don't have answers. We have three children. I was asked once, which child do you love the most? Well, that's a horrible question. I love them equally. That's equally. We love them all. We love each of our three children, but I treat them very differently. We have one child who's quite liberal. She heads the LGBTQ agenda for the university where she works. She's very liberal. She's very socially active. We have another child who's quite conservative. And we have a third child who doesn't care at all. And I love each of them. Now, that to me is kind of the issue that I think leaders have to continually navigate. On the one hand, we have to care about every person. We treat every person with dignity, with respect. On the other hand, we try to help those people perform at their best level. And so we hold them accountable. How do you navigate some of that inherent paradox? Let me give one example, and then I'll try to give a principle. I'm coaching a leader in a big company, and a very senior leader, not in HR. One of that leader's employees made a huge mistake that was going to cost an enormous amount of money. This company tended to put things in writing so they were documented. Here is the short document. You made a huge mistake that's going to cost us enormous amount of money. If you don't get better, you're going to be fired. That leader I was coaching sent me the document and said, you told me I had to talk to you before I sent it. And I said, thank you. Let me add three things. Really simple. I care about you. You have great potential at this company. You made a huge mistake. It's going to cost us millions of dollars. Notice you can't walk away. That's the paradox. You can't walk away that you made a mistake. And then the third thing I added, let's learn from it so that we can improve. Don't threaten, learn. Now, the reason I share that is I think that issue of meritocracy, that meritocracy is equity. You get what you give. Equality is everybody's equal. You got to navigate both of those. And I think the gift of leaders is being able to do that. That shows up in some of the, you talked earlier when you kicked it off about do more, do good. Organizations are sources of good. I've struggled in the diversity movement and the do good movement. You talk about handicapped, you talk about the disabilities, you talk about race, gender, ageism. I see it. You will someday, long way away. I think there's two assumptions that we have to look at. Assumption number one, everyone has something to offer. Mm-hmm. Stop and think about that. For those that may be emotionally, physically disabled, they have something to offer and it's a value. It may not be the same thing you offer. You're creative, you're dynamic, you're not serious, you're curious. I learned your two key principles. You have something to offer. That's cool. Everyone does, and they're different, and they're all valuable. That is assumption one that's going to sustain the diversity in efforts. Number two, a leader's job is to use his or her power to empower others. Mm-hmm. Let me say that again. Power is not about my control. Power is about how I make somebody else better. So I make somebody else's offering valuable to the enterprise. Now, they're not all going to be the same. Somebody who has a smaller offering may get a different outcome than somebody with a bigger offering. That's okay. That's equity. You give what you get. Equality is everyone has something to offer. And my job as a leader in HR business is to use my power to empower you. I'll close that. There's all kinds of research. I love statistics. I love data. Somebody said, what's your greatest test of a leader? And I'll say it and then I'll demonstrate it. When I leave an interaction with that individual, do I feel better or worse about myself? What a simple test. When I leave an interaction with an individual, do I feel better or worse? You and I have never met. Someday I hope we can meet in person and have an engaging interaction. But I'm going to tell you right now, even in this 40-minute interaction, thank you. I'm leaving feeling a little better about myself. That's the test, I think, of ultimate leadership. Because you use your influence, your power, your skills, your resources with me to help me feel better about myself. And I think those two assumptions, everyone has something to offer, use your power to empower others. I think if we did those, some of those diversity issues get melded together. Boy, I've covered a lot. That's the do more agenda for me.
If there's one thing I've learned from our conversation, it's just the power of stories. Like, you have shared so much and they've all like triggered. I could have a 3-hour conversation with you right now and like picking each part of. But yeah, I know I have to get us out of here at some point of time. So before I try and close it all out, I'm going to ask you a whole bunch of questions with like a one sentence answer, right? And I'm going to start with this topic. Like, if there's one thing you want to see organizations do today, like one concrete action that they can take in the space of equity, equality, diversity, and so on, what would you like to see them do?
Empower others. Empower others. Make others better.
Do you know, like, if it was like one tiny action, like one thing that they could put on a to-do list, which is
push decision making to the individual who has the ability to make the decision, like that Ukraine example. We don't know how to do benefits. We're going to push them down. Empower others with decision making.
Perfect. And now I'm going to move to other 3 random questions. First, what's your favorite trend at the moment? HR, non-HR, anything?
The hope and resilience of the human spirit. We've done, and I'm sorry I'm saying too much about that. We've looked back, learn, have grit. I'd rather look forward and seize opportunity.
Amazing. What's the one word or phrase that you're tired of hearing?
You said, to be honest, I'm kind of tired of hybrid work. And here's why. Hybrid work is where you work and how you work. When it's not new. You've done hybrid work. I've done hybrid work my whole career. I think the right question is, why are you working? And what are you working on? And I don't care as much where it is or how you do it. I care that you're creating value for others through your work.
Oh, I wish Elon Musk was listening to this, because it's all over social media today of his letter to Tesla saying, come work in office or we'll pretend that you no longer work for us. But with that, Dave, my final, last but one question to you. What's your go-to party trick?
Ask questions. I shouldn't confess this. No, ask questions. Ask questions. When I am a total introvert, and so I'm not a party animal. And sometimes my goal in a party is to have an entire party where all I do is ask questions and don't have to share anything about myself.
Oh, that's wise.
By the way, I've got to say this, and I'm going to get in trouble for saying it. Elon Musk's greatest risk is the erosion of the quality of management. Look at the quality of people who've left his company over the last 10 years. His greatest risk are those kind of statements, which he says to be bombastic. I mean, he's not a stupid man, but he's putting at risk his company's future when he makes statements that are so declarative. If I were in a position to ever advise him, I'd say, don't put at risk your company with silly statements, because you're making all either or, black or white. There's no subtlety there at all. Of course, people should be at work. Where they work, if they can help build cars in China and Germany, their 2 new plants, if a design engineer can do that sitting in an office in Delhi or sitting in an office in Sri Lanka, you don't care. You want cars built. And be careful to not put people at risk. And somebody should do a study of all the key people who've left Tesla. I think that's the greatest risk of a great company, which is really sad. Boy, that's a pretty aggressive statement.
Well, we love aggressive statements in here.
Thank you so much.
Dave, it was an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. Before you go, is there any advice or closing words for our listeners and me?
I post on LinkedIn every Tuesday. I hope you'll read it. The article I posted this week is one I feel strongly about. Take care of yourself. Take care of yourself so that you can take care of others. So I'd encourage, wherever we are, take care of yourself. And whatever that means, whatever that means, I hope it's not drugs and addiction and toxicity, but take care of yourself so that you can care for others. That would be my message.
So Dave Aldrich told me to do so.
Not to do drugs, but to take care of myself.
Yeah. Dave, again, like this is a landmark moment for the pod and for me personally. It is an absolute pleasure. Folks, that's all for this episode. We will see you soon. Until then, On behalf of Dave, Anacharyan, and I, we are out.
You're tuned in to the HR Bandit podcast, your one-way ticket to the latest and craziest in the world of work. In partnership with Timber Media, Podcaster for India, Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.